Book Festival. This is our second day after a big day yesterday. Thank you for coming. Sorry for the delay. We've been furiously making your food. This is a brunch with recipes from Jack Monroe's Cooking on a Bootstrap cookbook, adapted to accommodate the bounty we received from City Harvest. So it's a real fantastic collaboration, and which really made sense to us and to them. Jack, I wanted to start with you and talk about, if you guys don't know, Jack Monroe is a campaigner and an award-winning cookery writer, and as stated, cookbook author. and the copies will be for sale upstairs on your way out. Tell us a little bit about your food journey.
Well, this is a long story, and I'm not sure how much time we have, but I'll try to condense it as much as possible. Basically, I have never been a particularly good cook, and I came to this really by, I had a very good job. I worked in the fire service in Essex. I answered 999 calls, directed fire engines around the county. It was great fun and I loved it. And then I got pregnant and found that I didn't have a job anymore. And because I couldn't work the night shifts in the fire service with a child on my own. So I ended up unemployed and very quickly in debt and on benefits and safe to say, not living my best life. And I quickly realised I needed to teach myself to cook if me and my son were going to get out of this alive. And that sounds drastic, but it really was the situation that I was in. So I had a couple of recipe books given to me by well-meaning family over the years. And I took them and I basically deconstructed those recipes and rebuilt them with the Sainsbury's Basics range. And I gave myself a food budget of £10 a week, and I took apart all the Gordon Ramsay and all the Nigella recipes and knocked out all the ingredients I deemed to be extraneous or too expensive and replaced them with basic tin tomatoes, swapped out beef for things like kidney beans, and some of it was absolutely disastrous because I was learning. But when you're really poor, you don't notice that you're not great at cooking because you just eat it anyway. And somewhere along the way, I learned, and I started to write my recipes up on a blog online because I was bored being a single mum on the dole, and I was lonely, and I thought maybe I could talk to other people on the internet. And one thing led to another, and Penguin offered me a recipe book deal, and then that did quite well, so they offered me another one. And then I've got this book, and I'm writing another book, and I seem to still be here, considering I started off mashing cans of kidney beans with change I found behind my couch. No one is more surprised than I am that I can fill a room full of people who want to really see if I'm as bad as cooking as I tell everyone that I am.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the campaigning aspect of it, because it occurs to me that the disparity of wealth is very apparent in food. When it comes to food, you know, people are like, oh, you can only use Madagascar vanilla for this, that, and everything. And there's a real condescension when it comes to cooking on a budget, and that you should be happy and mustn't grumble. And I felt that this is sort of your response to that kind of condescension. And I also really, really understood, you know, times when I've been very short on money. I did make this once disastrous conch stew. And I had to eat it because that's what I had. But then when you're a parent, you have to feed your kid and your kid has to eat it.
Yes.
So, my son's here, I don't think in the world of Sundays I can force him to eat conch stew from a can. But yeah, so that, you know, you are really campaigning for, one, awareness, and two, this has to change.
Well, yeah, I mean, initially my recipes were basically deconstructions and reconstructions of child food, because I had to get it via a two-year-old. So I made my own chicken nuggets, I made my own like macaroni cheese ready meals, I made my own, it was simple basic recipes. And after that I started to branch out into slightly more adventurous things, not through any imagination, but through what I got from the food bank, I had to pull together and turn, make it into something that loosely resembled a burger to get it past a child who at 8 years old now doesn't fall for my tricks, but has a pretty reasonable palate anyway. And somewhere along the way, I quite obviously have learned to cook and I'm quite good at it. It's the only thing I'm good at, so I can slightly brag about it. And I'm now, I want to teach people that just because you don't have very much, you don't have to settle for the endless porridge that, you know, any Tory MP who does live below the line every year to raise a bit of money. Absolutely phenomenal cause and completely admirable to anyone who lives on a pound a day to raise money for, you know, for good causes. That they all come out the end of it going, well, a bag of porridge is just a pound. And you're like, yeah, but unless you've eaten porridge for every meal every day for a fortnight, don't sit there and tell other people that it's just 4p a bowl. Of course it's 4p a bowl. It's because it's horrid. It's like, you know, it's because, you know, and it's not horrid if you put cream in it and a bit of brandy and whatever, but actually on its own, as a sloppy gruel made with water day in, day out, it's horrible. So I wanted to take the principles of eating on a budget and make it into basically what you're eating now, and show people that you don't have to have a fortune or a kitchen the size of an aircraft hangar in order to be able to eat food that, you know, is worthy of inviting your friends around to share it with them.
Excellent. And actually, speaking of what you're eating now, Scylla, could you and Jack talk about the recipes and then how they were adapted?
I'll let Scylla do this because I ran in here at 11:05 past some of you who were waiting outside swearing my head off because I was late. So I have had absolutely zero input into the lunch that you're eating, apart from the fact that I made the recipes. But Scylla and her team have done a fantastic job pulling together my half-assed scrawlings into a fantastic brunch for you guys. So I'll let Scylla talk about it.
Thank you very much. So we based it all on Jack's recipes. It was all great. But obviously they're very versatile, so you can replace things. And I think that's the principle of your cooking as well. And we teamed up with City Harvest, who doesn't do a lot of tinned food, they do a lot of fresh food. So we have replaced things like in the scones, we've done watercress and brie. Yeah, I can still. So we've done the scones with watercress and brie instead of any cheese and Brussels sprout. And we've done the tinade, which is like a tuna mackerel or sardine dish. We've done it with fresh salmon instead. And we got some beautiful salmon from City Harvest as well, so we took a little bit of an initiative and did a beetroot cured with a beetroot sauce. But it is all Jack's recipe, and they're great. And I think it really proves that, you know, you can eat varied and healthy on a budget. So.
I mean, what I try to do is I try to make food taste good from the lowest possible common denominator. So I make mine with like smart price tinned tuna and tinned potatoes. So what you're getting is actually the definite Chiswick version of my Sainsbury's basics recipes. And I will be going down that table snarfing a bit of every single one going, God, this is what food could taste like.
Thank you so much. I wanted to turn now to Laura Winningham, who is co-founder and CEO of City Harvest London. And Laura, if you could tell us what City Harvest does, etc.
Okay. City Harvest is a charity based not too far from here in Acton, and we collect surplus food from any food business around London. Could be restaurants, supermarkets, manufacturers, events, and we redistribute it to charities that prepare meals for people in the community that are facing hunger. So each week we pick up around 30 tons of food, and that translates into 60,000 meals at community programs across the city. And what we specialize in is getting all in-date fresh food that would have been thrown out by businesses. So everything you're eating today is the type of food we bring to charities each week. We go to around 250 charities and deliver food. So the charities have their food budgets reduced and they could use that money for other essential services for the people that they serve. So we've been up and running for 4 years.
4 years, okay,
yep.
Great. This is, I remember when City Harvest started in New York, and it made such a huge visual and just a huge impact. Because also garbage in New York, you know, stands out on the curb. And everyone sees it, and in the summer it's foul. So it was truly celebrated, and it's a bit more hidden here. So Right, how can we make this more visible and more people know about it and help out?
Yeah, that's the thing. Our awareness here is rather low. We've done it under the radar, but the need is growing. Food businesses are slowly finding out about us, but unlike New York, we're not going around in huge trucks. We have small, we have a fleet of 8 refrigerated vans that circle the city each day. But it's been a word of mouth effort. So, you know, people here today can mention to anyone they know with a food business or an event that the food doesn't need to be thrown out. It could be collected by us. And it could be, I mean, we pick up from the Chelsea Flower Show from Wimbledon. It could be large events or small events if there's enough food left over to bring to one other charity.
Fantastic. So we could just hit a big mile marker.
Oh, yes. So last week we delivered food for our 3 millionth meal in less than 4 years.
And if I could turn to Paula Marbury, who is the head of operations. So Paula gets the food to and from. Tell us about how it works.
And it is quite chaotic. We never know what we're getting. So when we pass our food on to the projects that we work with, they never know what they're getting from us. We have feast or famine just before the bank holiday weekend. We actually ran out of food. We never used to have, when we first started, we were virtual. We just worked out of our vans, and so we had nowhere to store food. We were getting more and more demand on what we needed, and people were expecting us to turn up with food. So we needed a warehouse. So we've had a warehouse now for just over a year. And in that, we store tins and dried goods, which we use for the emergencies when we run out of fresh food. And then we can at least give some store cupboard food to our projects. So just before the bank holiday, we ran out. The supermarkets, I think everybody on the back door must have gone on holiday that week. And if the person on the back door that supports us goes away, we don't get the food because the other person isn't involved and doesn't see the point of it all. And we ran out of our tinned food and our dry food as well. So it's been a couple of weeks now. We're building back up, but our focus really is on trying to get fresh food. And over the years, it's been going to the back doors of the supermarkets, picking up from Tesco's, picking up from Marks and Spencer's, Whole Foods, that sort of place. And they've all done their best, but you can talk to the people at the top of the chain and they'll be engaged. You can talk to the managers on the floor, they'll be engaged, but it's the people at the back door that really, really matter. With feast and famine, it comes in sort of gluts. So this time of year, we've got lots and lots of tomatoes. We had tons of cucumbers this week. Every year we have Cucumber Gate because people cannot believe how many cucumbers there are in the world. But yes, we don't know what to do with them all. And when we pass these sort of foods on to our projects, and our projects have to, we always say we're a top-up service. Our projects have to look at the food and then go, okay, what do we do with this? We've got celery and cucumber and a load of lettuce. We've been very lucky just lately. We're getting some very high-end fish, and we're getting quite a lot of decent meat. When it comes into us, we specialise on the last minute, last mile food. So we get quite a lot of food that's going out of date on the day. So our drivers go out in the mornings, they pick up, they take food out of our warehouse, but they also top up with the food that they pick up on their rounds. Anything that doesn't, we don't want them to come back with food, we want them to give it all away. If they do come back with food and it's going out of date that day, then we check it and we freeze it and we give it an extra life. So the salmon that you've got on your table today probably came in 2 weeks ago. We froze it. We had an awful lot of salmon one day. So we had a freezer full of salmon, and you have the last pickings of that glut of salmon that we had. The chefs and the cooks and just the usual sort of neighbours and community-minded people that are feeding their neighbours and friends who are struggling to make ends meet really have a challenge on their hands when our stuff turns up. And they do some amazing things. I mean, I'm just always impressed with what they come up, and they send us photos and they send us thank yous, and it's really quite amazing and incredibly humbling at times, because there are people out there who have nothing, but they're giving everything they've got to their communities, and they're just ordinary people working really hard. So
but I should say that they can use recipes like this, and we often find ourselves in situations where we get some strange
vegetable from New Covent Garden Market, and we search for the recipes ourselves
and tell them what to do so the food isn't wasted. The need is so much more than we expected it to be when we first started. We had mapped out around 200 charity programs that serve meals. Now our map has 1,100 on them. We bring to around 250, but as more food comes in and more funding comes in and we could add more vans to our fleet, we can get, there's enough food to get, we just need the resources to get it to the projects that need it. You know, in some of the boroughs where we deliver food, 40% of the children live in poverty. In families where the parents might not be eating so the children can live. There are some really desperate pockets in London. People don't appreciate the need. Every week we get requests from charities trying to feed more and more people that are coming in. Maybe they're housed, they're not homeless people, but at the end of the month, they can't afford to buy food for their families. And my team is extremely passionate because most of the people that we employ have experienced food poverty. So Paula was homeless with three children years ago and knows what it's like to try and figure out how to feed a family. So most of my team has that knowledge and passion, and so we're deep in the community finding the right places to bring the food.
Jay, I've seen on Twitter that you're really concerned about food banks closing as well. And with all this, we talk about food waste and personal food waste, and then this is sort of industrial scale food waste, and yet food banks are closing.
I think it's a case of the, in a lot of cases, resources not getting to where they're needed. I mean, food banks operate a completely different system from what City Harvest does. They rely on donations of tinned and like ambient goods. So it's not a case of there's a surplus of something and it needs to go somewhere. It relies on people digging in their pockets and paying to feed their neighbours. And I think food banks hit the media quite hard about 4 or 5 years ago, and everyone was in shock about them. And it was like, oh God, this is happening in our country, in our economy, it's happening on our streets, it's happening to our neighbours. And they've sort of become institutionalised in the way that there's, you know, the DWP now refer people to food banks, care organisations now accept that they're a resource that are there and direct people to them rather than attempting to resolve the underpinning reasons why people might turn up there in the first place. And every Tesco and Sainsbury's has got a great big feed your community basket in their supermarket. So at the point where we become almost blind to the impact because it's become just like a cozy little initiative, I think then people start to become complacent about the scale of the need. So while I work with food banks on a daily basis, I fully support the work that they do. I was a former food bank user. I think that the narrative needs to be ramped up slightly in order that people realise that this is still an urgent need in our communities, and it hasn't, just because it's no longer on the front pages of the newspaper and instead it's just perched on the end of the checkouts, it's no less shocking. And we shouldn't be being complacent about the reasons why they're there. 1.4 million people used the Trussell Trust Food Bank last year, a third of those were children. And that is a phenomenal number. And Trussell Trust only operate on average 1 in 4 food banks in the UK. So that's, you're looking at numbers far greater than are ever documented. And they are running out, not because they're there and people know about them, but because the need for them has so sharply risen, and the underpinning safety nets that used to stop people from falling into poverty are no longer there.
And is that funding cuts?
If I can just say something, we work with some of the Trussell Trust food banks, but we also work with the community food banks, and probably about, I would say about 30% of our charities are people running unofficial food banks for people in their community. But there's a large percentage of children's centres and family centres that have children that are in childcare, and the parents are both working and they've all got reasonable jobs. but they know that those families are struggling. So within the children's centres and things that we go to, they just very quietly hand out a shopping bag once a week. They'll say, oh, you know, you've got to take this with you. And they're being very subtle because they know which are the families. And they're people, you know, your neighbours and friends will be, there'll be people around you who are struggling to make ends meet. They'll have good jobs. They'll have, they won't be the high-end payers, but there'll be people who've got two or three children, especially single mothers. They'll be working. And they're just ordinary people that, you know, you pass in the street and you wouldn't think they were struggling, but they are. And it's the sort of resources that we have that keep them going. But I think a lot of it is there's the working poor. There are people on the street. We know now there's an increase of people who are working and homeless. There's so many people sofa surfing nowadays because underpinning the whole thing, I don't know, or not underpinning it, is the fact that the cost of living now, certainly within housing and private rentals and social housing, doesn't exist. There are more and more people falling off the rails, and they're not the people you expect. You know, it's really quite hidden, and I think it is being forgotten, and I don't think people are really looking into why it's there and why it's increasing.
I can completely resonate with that. One of the things I was most frequently asked by journalists when I finally admitted how poor I was, well, where were your parents? It was like they lived three roads away. And they said, well, why didn't they do anything? I said, because they didn't know. Because it's very easy to put your best coat on, to go to the food bank and to carry on brushing your hair and to not talk to anyone about what's really going on in your life. I stopped inviting people round because my house was cold and I didn't have a couch for people to sit on. I didn't have any light bulbs and I'd unplugged my fridge so I couldn't offer anyone a cup of tea. So people literally just assumed that I was busy. And friends fall off your radar. And how many of us stop to think, oh, I wonder what they're up to, or I wonder if they're struggling, or one of the most common things people used to say to me when they saw me in my local high street was, you've lost weight, you look brilliant. Well, it's astounding what literally starving can do to your waistline. But it's, yeah, there will be people in your own communities, in your own churches, in your own school playgrounds, who you will have no idea of what is going on below their surfaces.
There is a shame attached to being poor.
Yeah, massively. And also, if you've got a child, I was absolutely living in fear that social services would take him away.
Yeah.
It's like, if I admitted to anybody how we were living, I might lose my son. And so I just didn't say a word to anyone. I was like, no, everything's fine. Yes, this is me having thirds of the lunch at the Sure Start Children's Centre and scraping the remainders into a Tupperware because I know I can eat it for a week. But no, everything's fine. And it took a real rock bottom desperation for me to finally turn around to people and go, actually things are a bit crummy. Can I have a hand? But that was 18 months in, thousands of pounds in debt through water bills and bank charges, yeah, and three suicide attempts later, my friends finally noticed that maybe things weren't all as they were cracked up to be.
And you're saying that City Harvest pays the living wage.
Yeah.
And that is still a struggle.
Yeah, I mean, my drivers and things, they work really hard. But those that have got children, some of the guys have got a couple of families to support and things. And we know at the end of the day, you know, there's food there. If we've got, we have a sort of rule, the fresh food and everything goes out to the people who we're working for and working with. But when we get the used-by goods and we get some beautiful used-by food and you look at it and you think, legally, there's lots of legislation around food. We can't give those foods out. So we all, my drivers and everything, are allowed to take the used-by food because it's still perfectly all right. And if we poison them, that's, you know, that's their choice. So they can have the ones that we're not allowed to give out. But, you know, you do know, and just every so often, you know, we get soap powder and things sometimes, and it's just so nice to give somebody a Persil or an Ariel instead of the Savers brands, you know. I still look at kitchen roll as a luxury. I look at bubble bath as a luxury. And certainly, you know, if there's a good brand comes in, then we really look at some of the stuff that we get in and we think, where can that go where it will really be appreciated?
Other than, you know, sort of volunteering, what a couple of things that you see that people in this room can actually do?
We have sort of three shifts of volunteers. We rely very heavily on volunteers because we aren't very well funded. We haven't got any sort of big people out there fighting our cause. So we at the moment need about 18 people a day to help us, and we have a morning shift where they come in and they help load the vans, and if they're lucky they can get out on the van and go and actually see where the food comes from and where it goes to. And that's a real eye-opener. If you want to see what we do and really and truthfully what food there is out there, then come and ride on one of our vans. You need to be at the warehouse for 8 o'clock. But yeah, you'll see the food that we've got, then you'll see what the drivers do. In the middle of the day, it's tidying up the warehouse. If we've got food in that needs date checking and rotating, then you spend a lot of time in the fridge just rotating the food that's in there, making sure that we don't waste any, so we've got all the food on the day out. And then we have an evening shift that starts about 5 o'clock, and that's when we get a big delivery from, we've only recently started this and it's made a massive difference, but we get a delivery from one of the big dot-com online supermarkets, and they bring us their food, their surplus, and then we have to shift all that through. And it can be 2 pallets, or it could be 10 pallets, or it can be 16 pallets. Some of it will be in date, some of it will be usable, some of it will be waste, because their computer system hasn't pulled it down in time. But we just need people who can stand there, sort through the food, maybe do a bit of tidying up, but it literally is taking food out of one tote and putting it into a basket ready to go out the next morning, and we can turn that food around in no time at all. So we're just around the corner in Acton. We have a website, we have an email, which is volunteer@cityharvest.org.uk. If you can send us an email and say that you're available. We have a 7-day operation now, so we're open Monday to Friday from 7 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night, and then Saturdays we're in from sort of 8:30 till about 4, and it's a real struggle Saturdays. They've got really busy and I'm really low on people. And then Sundays we have the afternoon when we get the delivery, so we start at sort of 3 o'clock and we finish about 8 o'clock hopefully. And it is, there's lots of different things you can do. There's bits maybe in the office, but what we actually need are people who are just happy to come in and just muck in really and do whatever they can. So volunteer@cityharvest.org.uk.
Thank you so much.
No, I've got nothing else to say.
Thank you so much for coming. Again, Jack's book, it will be for sale upstairs for delicious good food made on a budget, or just delicious good food. Thank you so much. I just need to thank our sponsors, which are As Nature Intended, and thanking the Co-op, Hogarth, and Borough Wines for their contributions to our festival as well. Thank you so much, and thank you guys. Thank you for your advocacy and the help that you're doing. Thank you so much.